from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, it has been a year since the passage of Proposition 47 in California, which was designed to downgrade certain crimes from felonies to misdemeanors and use the savings from prison releases to fund rehabilitation programs, educational and victim services, and programs to reduce school truancy and dropout rates. With thousands of inmates already having been released under the sentencing law and savings of over $150 million, we'll take stock of the first year of Prop 47 in this Forum Hour up ahead, and we'll hear from those who support it and those who say it's making California less safe. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Last year, California voters passed Proposition 47, which downgraded drug possession and five other nonviolent crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. A new study finds that since the law went into effect, about 13,000 fewer people have been incarcerated in California, saving the state more than $150 million. But critics in law enforcement say that Proposition 47 took away their felony hammer to drive drug users into treatment and blame the law for a crime spike in some cities. In this opening Forum Hour, we look at Proposition 47 one year in. Let me tell you who is joining us for this hour. George Gascon, a district attorney for the City and County of San Francisco, former chief of police for the San Francisco Police Department, is here with us in studio. And welcome,
good morning,
George.
Michael.
Glad
morning.
To have you. Also glad to have Steve Wagstaff with us, who's district attorney of San Mateo County. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Michael Romano here in studio as well, director of the Three Strikes Project for the Stanford Law School and also principal author of the Prop 47 Progress Report, Year One Implementation. Welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin with you, if I might, Michael. What do we have in the way of data here that really proves that this is working in the way it was intended to work?
Well, I think so. So at the outset, let me just say that I was a co-author of Proposition 47 along with D.A. Gascon.
Good full disclosure.
Yes, and also that we received some money from foundations that also have supported the initiative. But to the report. Year into the report, we went to try to look at all the data that is available from the state and county governments as to how this initiative is being implemented. And for the most part, I think that we conclude that the initiative is being implemented as it was designed and advertised. So low-level drug offenders and petty thieves are being released from prison. There are fewer people in prisons and jails, about 13,000 fewer people than there were before Proposition 47 passed. And we're saving the state and county governments hundreds of millions of dollars. The way that Proposition 47 was designed was that those savings are to be transferred from the state funds and ultimately spent on drug treatment programs, reducing truancy, mental health treatment, and actually victim services as well.
Yeah, forgive me. I mentioned most of this in the introduction. Those programs are not really up and running yet, though, are they?
Well, the programs are up and running. The money that has been saved in Proposition 47 will go to supplant and add more money to those services. So the money from Proposition 47, you're correct, has not come online yet, but these monies will go to support additional services. The other thing that I think that is important that we found in the report is that the recidivism rate of the folks who have been released early under Proposition 47 is remarkably low. Fewer than 5% of the people who have been released from prison under Proposition 47 have been reconvicted of new crimes and sent back to prison. So that's something that we're very happy with. But for the most part, I believe the data shows, at least the data that is available, that Proposition 47 is working as advertised.
Well, Steve Wagstaff, from your perspective, not necessarily working. You don't have the hammer or the stick to get people into drug treatment. And that's pretty much your main concern, isn't it?
It was throughout my main concern. But it's not impossible to do it. I look at what Sacramento County is doing. Judge White up there, she is on the misdemeanors to provoke the stick she's using is saying, hey, your deal is I'm going to sentence you to 8, 10, 12 months in county jail unless you get into these programs. And she found it working. The difficulty is in many counties, unfortunately mine's one of them, our judges aren't using that tool that's available to them. They are treating them like the classic misdemeanors. So we really don't have the hammer that we want in our county. So,
and what about the arrests? I mean, are arrests pretty much staying at the same rate? I mean, I imagine at least I've heard from some law enforcement officials that if you're just going to pick somebody up for a misdemeanor, it doesn't almost seem worth it.
Well, in some counties, that is the case. Not in San Mateo County. We happen to have a law enforcement agencies there that are continuing to enforce the law. They're citing them on the misdemeanors. They're not arresting them, but they're citing them and they come to court. But we continue to prosecute full tilt.
And what about DNA samples? I understand some of them are set aside or destroyed because of misdemeanors and not felonies.
Well, there's a law that's gone through one of the – there were many offers of changes to Prop 47 in the legislature this year. One of them did make its way through related to DNA and the ability to take some DNA on some cases that previously would have been felonies and we wouldn't, and we get that. So I'm feeling pretty good about where the DNA aspect of it is.
What are you feeling pretty bad about in terms of a year later?
Well, I'm concerned that there our counties due to resources, because we all know about the courts. The state government has not provided our courts with the resources they need. So my judges, when I wanted to do some special work on the Prop 47 cases, my judges simply said, we don't have resources. Can't do it. Can't set it up that way. I connected them up with this judge who's in charge in Sacramento, but they just have told us a year later, sorry, we can't give you that assistance that you need. So that part bothers me a great deal. And the other part that I wish would have been different, but again, you know, I could wish for a lot of things. It's not Christmas morning. But I would wish that we could, for the repeat offenders who we're not getting to, who just simply aren't getting the message, and that's a small portion. That,
you're talking about serial offenders.
Yeah, pretty much on these offenses that it's always a misdemeanor. And I wish that after a certain number, we could have moved that up. But otherwise, my wish list is satisfied.
So what happens to people who are charged with misdemeanors? Are they going to jail for the most part? For how long?
Well, I guarantee it varies from county to county. In Los Angeles, it'll be very different from San Mateo County.
Los Angeles is where we're hearing more complaints emanating.
Yeah, I think that's the case in San Mateo County. For instance, you know, in Michael's report, if you look at we're one of the top 15 counties in terms of size, and we're just a tiny sliver of people who came back from state prison because we weren't sending these people to state prison by and large. Some of the other counties are big, high rockets on that chart. And so for us, the state prison hasn't really changed anything. It is certain people, though, who are the repeat offenders. I talked to one of my prosecutors early this morning who was saying that he was filing six separate incidents on one person committing auto burglaries and thefts. And so those are the ones we'd like to be able to do more with due to resources with our courts, not with the DA, not with probation. We have the resources in law enforcement. We have it. It's with the courts that don't have the – say, we can't get them into these specialty courts.
Let me go to George Gascon, who also is here with us in studio. And District Attorney Gascon, you're seeing success with this? I heard you say $770,000 a day. That sounds pretty good to the cash register. But what about people who are actually – well, for one thing, there's a three-year sunset on this. Are people going and changing – in terms of the necessity of changing things from felony to misdemeanor?
Well, you know, I think, Michael, there are a lot of people that are taking advantage of the reclassification, and that's a good thing for us. There were a lot of people that couldn't get public housing, could not get a lot of different types of employment, a lot of different services that are not available traditionally to someone that has a felony conviction. And part of Prop 47 was actually providing that vehicle for people to reenter into our society. You know, we often complain about the high recidivism rate in the state that has been dogging us for decades. But, you know, part of the high recidivism rate is that we incarcerated people often. We incarcerate them for longer periods than they should. We put them in a setting where we set them up for failure. And then when we brought them back into society, we told them, you can work, you can be housed, you can get an education. And then when they reoffend, we all turn around and say, you know, we're surprised, right? I agree with Steve to the extent that there are, you know, law enforcement is struggling with the new environment, if you will. But I think it's something that eventually will work its way out. I think that most law enforcement professionals are that. They are professionals, and while they may be unhappy with the outcome of Prop 47, I think that they will adjust. I think it's a problem. For instance, when the court says that they don't have enough resources, I find that hard to understand because they are now prosecuting misdemeanors instead of felonies. And I can tell you that prosecuting felonies is a much more laborious work, both for the court and for the prosecutors and everybody else involved. A misdemeanor in many counties, quite frankly, is a one-day trial, if you have a trial, whereas a felony may be weeks. So I find that it's just simply, you know, let's move the resources in a different direction. I think places like San Francisco, certainly, much like San Mateo did, you know, we only have 4 people that came out of prison. In fact, we only had 18 people altogether that were released out of Prop 47, 14 out of jail and 4 out of prison. So when you hear local law enforcement talking about, you know, all these people that are being released, the reality is in San Francisco there was 18. We were already functioning as if Prop 47 existed, much like San Mateo did. And I think that issues like drug court, for instance, look, if we want drug court, if we believe that drug courts are good, by the way, I do, but if we really want to make sure that people avail themselves of it, you know, judges can do so like they're doing in Sacramento. Or we collectively in law enforcement can go to the legislators and say we're going to make drug court mandatory and create legislation around that. And that would certainly be consistent with Prop 47. The reality that Prop 47, as Michael indicated, was intended to do several things. And it was to reduce our addiction to incarceration and bring that money to provide services for the mentally ill and the drug addicted. And that is what it's going to do. And I don't believe that over any over an extended period of time that we're going to see that crime is going up. I don't think there's any basis to support that crime is going up as a result of Prop 47. In fact, when we talk about Otto Bergs, something that is often not spoken is that this is still a felony. This can still be prosecuted as a felony. I have a problem here in our own county, and I have seen this in L.A., where cops are saying, well, we can't prosecute robberies because basically Prop 47 is doing this. I say, well, wait a minute. Since when is a robbery a misdemeanor? And then the reality is that even under a misdemeanor—
Are they confused about what the law is?
You know, apparently there's some confusion there. You know, and then the other thing, and I think Steve is making a very good point. You know, in San Mateo County, they're still prosecuting aggressively misdemeanors, and you can still face substantial time in jail for a misdemeanor. So it's not like this is a get-out-of-jail card.
Let's, for the sake of understanding here, define what actually is now a misdemeanor as opposed to having been a felony. Can we do that right. with you, Michael Romano, sure. and then we'll come back?
Sure. So Proposition 47 reduced 6 low-level crimes from felonies to misdemeanors, and these were drug possession crimes, petty theft, and possession of stolen property. So those crimes prior to Proposition 47 could have been prosecuted as felonies at the discretion of the prosecutors and DAs, and now those are mandatory misdemeanors.
Well, George Gascon, I think there's still concern. I mean, those who have written excoriating Prop 47 is not working and so forth say that there have been unintended consequences that sort of, well, in fact, I think phrasing from an editorial I read said the 60% who voted for this have been sold a bill of goods because safety and security concerns are the unintended consequences. And you say what to that?
Well, you know, I think this is the very same people that went around campaigning aggressively against Prop 47. They're unhappy, and anything that goes wrong, they're going to blame it on Prop 47. This is, by the way, the same crowd that when Prop 36 passed indicated that the world was going to come apart because we were letting these felons come out that were in prison pretty much for life. And we have seen the lowest recidivism rate out of that group of any group is somewhere, you know, 1%, 2%, Michael.
There's a lot of criticism of realignment, too, and, you know, Public Policy Institute.
And I was going to go to realignment next, and the same thing. And now we got studies. Now we're beginning to crunch numbers that say that realignment actually has not really caused an increase in crime, other than possibly there's some correlation with auto theft. I think there sometimes crimes go, you know, crime goes up and goes down in certain jurisdictions, and it's not always easy to tell why. We're seeing some areas, other parts of the country that are clearly not impacted by Prop 47, where crime has gone up in the last year. In San Francisco, our property crime has started to go up early in 2014, way before Prop 47 came into place. And the reality is that if you look at San Francisco crime for the last 20 years, actually crime is the lowest it's ever been. San Francisco traditionally has had very high levels of property crime, and they went down significantly around 2010. Not quite all explainable, and they have gone up a little, but still way below what has been the trend for the past 20 or 30 years.
But Michael Romano, mental health rehabilitation and drug programs down in numbers? That's what I'm reading.
Well, I'm not sure that they're down in numbers. I think that there is always a need in the communities to spend more time and energy, especially on mentally ill offenders who are cycling in and out of the systems. These are basically, you know, especially in San Francisco, homeless, mentally ill drug addicts who cycle in and out of the system because they have really nowhere to go and no services to provide for them. So one of the things that I hope comes out of Proposition 47 is that of the hundreds of millions of dollars that will be saved year after year after year, that more of these services can be provided for folks that in that situation. That's certainly the design of the initiative. We won't know exactly how much money will be saved. That's up to the Department of Finance next summer. But we anticipate hundreds of millions of dollars every year to be going to those services.
Well, here's Los Angeles County Sheriff Jim McDonnell, who says addicts who are stealing to support their habit are now reoffending over and over again with very little consequence or services.
The individuals we're dealing with were not in treatment. Treatment was down, the numbers I heard, 60%. They were not in custody. They were on the street reoffending over and over again. And so when you look at that, I think it paints a picture that we didn't set it up for success. And I think to the detriment of all of us, because what we've seen then is an increase not only in property crime, but also in violent crime. And that certainly has taken its toll on the county.
District Attorney Wagstaff, that conforms to your vision, doesn't it?
No.
No?
No. He made a couple comments in there that I don't see. Well, first of all is the connection. I know we're 1 year in, and there isn't a conceivable way on earth we can gauge. First of all, there's no money out yet. That will be hopefully in 2016 or 2017 to find out what exactly that's going to occur. Violent crime, I don't believe. I don't believe Prop 47 can in any fashion be connected to any increase in violent crime. And when it comes to property crime, yes, it is up in my county. It is completely up. But in 1 year, I'm going to try and sit there and say it's due to Prop 47. That's fanciful. It may be have a role in it, but for me, I think you can't really assess this till the earliest 3 to 5 years.
What about minimal time for, say, possession of things like meth or heroin or coke, or for that matter, somebody who's caught with date rape drugs?
Yeah. The trouble with it is that, again, I was one of those people that George referred to. I was one of the heavy ones out there opposing Prop 47 for a variety of reasons. I am of that crowd.
You're but coming now, around, though, it sounds like.
I don't know what to say I'm coming around, but it's now my law. And the reason it's my law now is because as I went around and told each one of my prosecutors the day after it passed is, okay, we didn't want it, we opposed it, but guess what? We're not the legislative branch. We're the executive branch, and we enforce, and this is now our law, and let's make it work. And that's what my whole focus has been in the last year, is to try and get it to where we can continue to get treatment. Now, the mental health, there's been zero drop-off in my book in that line. What we've been doing before, we can continue to do with the mental health issues. I am concerned about the drug treatment for the people who aren't getting drug treatment that I want in drug treatment. And that's where I think the law needs to evolve, seriously. And that may have played a role in this all this crime, but not violent. I'm not going to suggest for a second it had anything to do with violent crime. But in terms of property crime, maybe. How can we conceive of it? I'm not sure how anybody can ever say it, because I'm betting Michael can come up with after 5 years and do some assessment, and maybe somebody on their side can do it, because numbers, I've always learned, are dramatically easy to be manipulated. Mark Twain told us that 140 years ago.
Well, what is the old liar's figure and figure's lie? Figure's lie and liar's figure. Let me do this. Let me open the phone line. So we're talking about Prop 47, the sentencing reform law, which is getting somewhat mixed reviews after it's been a year in place. And you may want to comment, and you may want to join the conversation, and certainly your questions are welcome. We invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program now at the phone number I'm giving you, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, talking with Michael Romano, director of the Three Strikes Project at Stanford Law School and principal author of Proposition 47, The Progress Report, Steve Wagstaff, who is district attorney of San Mateo County, and George Gascon, who is district attorney for the city and county of San Francisco. And generally, I suppose citizens want to know, how do you judge these things and what are your metrics? And Michael Romano, let's get to that, because a lot of it seems subjective, frankly.
Sure. So that was one of the things that we tried to do with the report, which was to tone down some of the rhetoric and see where the data lies. Unfortunately, there isn't a ton of data out there in terms of, you know, county level specifics, who's getting arrested for what. But there is some state level of data that is available that we were able to pull together for the report. So, for example, how many people have been released from jail? How many people have been released from prison since these initiatives have been passed? How many people have been returned of those people who've been released from prison? How many of them have gone back to prison? All of those show, as I said before, that the initiative is working as designed. Low-level offenders are being released from custody, spending shorter time in custody, and at least those who were released from prison have not been returned to prison. We're able also to use those figures to find out how many people have been released, and it's about 13,000 across the state, to tabulate how much savings will be used and saved by the state and county governments. Proposition 47 captures the money that's saved by the state. And this year, we expect it'll be about $150 million for reasons that I can explain. In subsequent years, it'll be a little bit less, closer to $90 million. And that money will be transferred again to the services for mental health and drug treatment programs that eventually, I hope, will come online. More money for these services to ultimately reduce crime. I mean, that was the intent of the initiative.
Well, sometimes, like George Gascon, you were giving numbers before, the public gets a little confused with the conflation of the numbers because you had 6,000 drug offenders, for example, released from federal prison due to the Obama administration's commitment to criminal justice reform. And these numbers sort of pinion each other in people's minds.
Right.
As opposed to separating the numbers from 47.
Right. No, absolutely. And it is important, obviously, to draw the distinctions. As I indicated before, in terms of 47 in the county of San Francisco, we're talking about 18 people, right? Four people out of state prison and 14 out of the local jail. The numbers that are coming out of the federal system are very different numbers, but it's, you know, it's the same concept. We're beginning to see that incarcerating people that are primarily there because of drug abuse and substance abuse is not a good idea. And I think that what is important for the public to begin to come around, and, you know, and Prop 47 is the beginning of this conversation, is, you know, we should be looking at drug substance abuse, and we should be looking at mental health as public health issues and not things that can be fixed through the criminal justice system. When I hear Jim McDonald, who happens to be a friend, and by the way, we kind of grew up together, so we're close. But, you know, the numbers that he's talking about in the county jail in L.A. are just they fly in the face of reality. The reality is that in L.A. County for the last 30 years, as people spend no time, they were being cycled in and out all the time because there was not enough space. In fact, people committing violent crimes in L.A. County were being released and only doing about 20% of their post-sentencing time. And now for the first time in 30 years, L.A. County is approaching 100% of sentence for violent convictions and somewhere around 80% for sentencing and nonviolent convictions. So actually, L.A. County for the first time in 30 years is seeing people doing the time, paying for the consequences of the convictions that they have. So I think that what you see is a tremendous level of uncertainty because, you know, frankly, my generation in law enforcement grew up in the lock 'em up years. You know, we, you know, there was, you know, increasing sentencing and becoming more punitive was fashionable, and we all believed in it, and now we're having to unwind for that. And I think that there's a certain uncertainty. The ground is shifting, but I think it's shifting for a good reason. What we did was not supported by the science. We have some of the highest recidivism rates of anywhere in the world, and the reality is that you need to approach things that are really driven by medical problems like substance abuse and mental health. You have to approach them with a medical solution and not with a criminal justice solution.
That's a much more humane set of standards, although I should mention, since we've been talking about L.A., Mayor Eric Garcetti, yeah, has been on record as saying the crime is up, way up in Los Angeles, and he does seem to think that 47 is related to it.
And arrests are way down, too. And not that, by the way, I'm encouraging that arrest rates could go up significantly, but I think that there is a problem, just like it is in San Francisco, where police officers feel that, you know, if I'm going to arrest on a misdemeanor, I'm not going to take the time to arrest. Well, that's not what the law says. You know, you look at our burglary from vehicle here, they're making arrests in 2% of the time. That, how can you cure a problem if you only have consequences 2% of the time?
We're coming up on a break. We got seconds left. But Steve Wagstaff and San Mateo, there's a lot of cut and release, a lot more.
Of rather than taking them down to the county jail, even
though
we don't have an overcrowding problem.
Yeah.
We've got lots of room at the inn.
Well,
so do we.
All right. We'll hear from our listeners when we return. Again, we invite you to join us toll-free 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org or on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Proposition 47, which passed last year, 60% of the voters, in fact, voted for it, and it downgraded drug possession and five other nonviolent crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. And there's a new study that finds that since the law went into effect, about 13,000 fewer people have been incarcerated in the state of California, which has saved the state more than $150 million. But critics say that in law enforcement, it's taken away their felony hammer to drive drug users into treatment, and they blame the law for a crime spike in some cities. We're looking at Proposition 47 1 year later. Let me go right to your calls, and let's begin with Como. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling because I have a family member that's unfortunately gotten into using drugs, and he's gotten to a point where he becomes violent now. And you call the cops, they take him for overnight, he comes right back out, starts the same thing, and there's no avenue for us. to get him any sort of help. So we're stuck in this circle where he's not getting any help for drug abuse, and we're constantly dealing with him just going from one end to the other.
Como, thank you for bringing that problem to our attention. And let me go to you on this, Steve Wagstaff. But let me also, with Como's question, add an email comment here from a listener named Susan who says, addiction should always have been treated as a public health rather than a criminal problem. One thing that some people don't seem to acknowledge is that ordering people to drug treatment is rarely effective unless they are ready for it. Hammers don't work. Addicts have to want to change. Incarceration may or may not motivate them to make the changes they need. And what's critical is to fund the services. So when people are ready, the services are there. Prop 47 provides funding for treatment services. The problem is that it lags releasing addicts, so they're being released before the treatment beds are available.
Well, dealing with one of the comments was made I disagree with, and the comment that people won't do it until they're ready. And that's true. Some people, young ones, maybe not be ready. However, the number of addicts that I've spoken to over the decades who will say, you know, I didn't want to do it, but once the judge made me get into it and I got into it, boy, I embraced it. I think that's the majority. That's why I continue to believe that criminal justice can play a helpful role with the goal to get them into it. It's not punish them. You're right. It's a health issue on that. I'm not punishing them, but I want to get them into treatment because I've seen so many people.
What do you do with someone like her brother? He just keeps going through the system over and over again.
Well, guess where that may be a problem? That may be a problem with the system if they're just basically letting him in and letting him out and not giving him the stick and that type of a thing. At some point, if nobody wants to, if a person does not want to change and the system is doing everything they can to provoke that change, well, then our job is to make sure that our public is protected and they're not getting burglarized and cars stolen and all that. Then we have to step in. But the number one thing, and we've been doing that, Georges County's done it for years, mine has too, which is we never punish anybody. We were never doing a prison except as, okay, this person refuses to take the help we're giving them, and we've just got to protect our public from burglaries.
And again, Steve Wagstaff is district attorney of San Mateo County, and our next caller is Karen from Oakland. Karen, join us. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have two things I'd like to say. One of them is I'm a community policing volunteer in North Oakland, and I'm probably in one of the safest neighborhoods in Oakland. And I keep track of the crimes in our neighborhood. And my numbers show that we have had a spike in auto burglaries since Proposition 14 went into effect.
47, you mean?
I don't know why I keep saying that. 47. Okay. I do mean 47. Prop 40. Remind me when Prop 47 went into effect. I believe it was March.
No, it was November of 2014.
Okay, that's interesting. They must have taken the holidays off. Our spike began in March of 15, and it's been consistently up since then. That's one thing I wanted to say. The second thing I wanted to say was all this talk about getting people out of prison and getting them into drug treatment and rehab all sounds really good, but it's awakening an echo in my mind. I was in California when Ronald Reagan said, oh, we can't keep all those people in insane asylums. We have to get them out into community clinics. And he got them all. He closed all the asylums, and the community clinics never came. And that's why we have mentally ill people on the streets. That's one of the reasons. And that, if we do that again here, we deserve what we get.
All right. I thank you for that editorial comment. George Gasco, want to respond?
Well, yes. First of all, I'm glad that, Karen, you recognize that your burglaries from vehicle went up, several months after Prop 47 was passed. So I'm not sure that there is necessarily a direct connection. I can tell you that in San Francisco, actually, they started way before Prop 47.
Car thefts are up in San
Francisco.
That's
right. Exactly. Way before Prop 47. So there you go. But as far as, you know, the issue of mental health services is a problem that continues to dog us, right? Even in San Francisco, which is a service-rich county, if I want to put somebody in an acute mental health bed, it may take 40 days of wait. There's a waiting period of about 40 days. Well, 40 days for someone that is either going to be facing 30 days in jail or have to wait 40 days in order to go into a mental health bed is a no-brainer. They're going to take the jail time. They're going to get released. They're going to go back out to where they came from, and they're going to reoffend, and they're going to be probably back in jail before the 40-day cycle goes through.
Couldn't you say the same thing, though, about a drug misdemeanor? They'll rather take the time in jail?
Absolutely, in many cases, because there is not enough treatment available. And I think that, you know, I do agree with the one person that's sending email that it's hard to force people into treatment. People, there is a combination of factors, but the reality is that people that are addicted, look, they're giving up their families, they're giving up their jobs, they're giving up their everything in order to get the next fix. If you talk to anybody that is an expert in drug addiction, will tell you that a typical addict is only thinking about the next fix, and that next fix may be 30 minutes away or an hour away. They really could care less whether they're going to be incarcerated once they have their fix, because it's not computing in their mind. So the bottom line is that, you know, caring is right. We emptied our insane hospitals or our mental health system. We broke it down, but we never replaced it with the community-based treatments that need to occur. And that is something that, frankly, I am hoping that Prop 47 and other efforts will become the prime in order for us to really begin to have a thoughtful and humane mental health services in this country and the state, because that's what we need.
I'm going to go to more calls in just a moment. Let me go, though, George Gascon, to an email and get your reaction. This is Peter who writes, how can your guest argue that it's difficult or impossible to figure out why crime goes up or down in any given instance, and at the same time argue that Prop 47 didn't contribute to subsequent crime? Perhaps without Prop 47, crime would have gone down even more. Is it possible to say, or isn't it? Please take a position and stick with it. Otherwise, you're just being opportunistic and cherry-picking.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad that, Peter, that you raised that, because I'm going to give you some stats that have enough years in place so that we can actually make sense of it. We in California started to release people because of overcrowding our prisons around 2006. We released about 40,000 people between 2006 and 2012, and during that period of time, our crime continued to go down. So here you have enough historical perspective, enough of a sample to look at the release of people from prison and the continuing reduction in crime, and you could argue that the release from prison certainly they're not causing increase in crime. The problem with using a simplistic way of looking at the numbers with Prop 47 is that we have to have enough history behind it in order to be able to make any sense of the numbers. But I can tell you that if we use the 2006 to 2012 sample where we released 40,000 people as opposed to the 4,400 people or so that have been released from prison as a result of 47, we could actually say that releasing people from prison arguably reduced crime.
Let me go to a caller. Mark, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. My question is, these propositions that we all know mostly come to fruition based on whomever spends the most on their advertising campaign. How is this proposition smarter than each individual prosecutor using their discretion, depending on their jurisdictions and the needs of their jurisdictions?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Steve Wagstaff.
Well, actually, that was a point that I made when I was opposing it, is that I thought there's 58 counties, 58 elected DAs who should be able to go their own route. The initiative chose to the contrary. I prefer to be able to do what works in my county, which is very different from Riverside, San Francisco, and everywhere else. But the voters chose otherwise. Therefore, I must work and do work with the law to make it as effective as I can. And it may be a different approach from what George does or other DAs do around the state. But the core is it starts with the law that we have as Prop 47 and how we make it work.
It's good for a DA to say I'm conforming and following the law here too, isn't it?
Well,
you set
what?
An example.
Yeah, but remember, I'm not your typical DA. I've never had an opponent. I've run. I don't worry about that. I do what I think is right. And on this one here, mine is I'm going to take what I view as the very positive points of 47, and I'm going to try and drive a truck with those to try and make it work. Because all I'm concerned about is the safety of my community and helping the addicts in my community to get treatment so they won't hurt the people in my community. That sounds like a campaign speech. It's actually a reality.
Well, we're getting certainly a lot of comments that are in opposition of 47. And Michael Romano, just to pluck one out here, Lou writes, I'd like to hear comments on the property crime spike I know we are experiencing in Santa Cruz. The timing corresponds with the passage of Prop 47, and local police officers have expressed frustration that they can't keep offenders off the street because of Prop 47 and the overcrowding it has pushed to the county level.
So let me just talk a little bit about the numbers that we do have. So certainly in some communities, it does appear that crime is going up. In other communities in California, Riverside, San Diego, Santa Clara County, crime is either steady or down. So I think it's difficult to attribute any crime trend one way or another as a result of Proposition 47. One thing that we can say for certain, and this is in our report, is that the people who have been released from prison, these are people that we're individually tracking, are not committing these crimes. So at least the folks who have been released as a result of Proposition 47, there's no evidence that they're responsible for any uptick or downtick in crime. The other thing that is in our report on that should assist DAs, sheriffs, and police departments is that Proposition 47 has eliminated certain overcrowding conditions in county jails. And in fact, we're releasing fewer people due to overcrowding as a result of 47. So crowding in county jails is down about 35% across the state. So that should assist the different DAs and sheriffs across the state in terms of managing the crime in their counties. But as I said, the one thing that we can say for certain is the folks who've been released from prison under Proposition 47 are not committing these crimes.
And District Attorney Wagstaff.
I wanted to make one comment on it because as I read Michael's report, the thought that crossed my mind is about the return to prison. And that may be the case. However, what we know on the practitioner level is that unfortunately our criminal justice system today doesn't work as well as we all would fast as we want it to. For some of those people who've been released out, their case, they may have cases in the system that just haven't come to fruition because the average felony case in our county, and I think most counties around the state, it's not getting done in 60 to 90 to 180 days, which still goes back to my big point that it's awfully hard to do a true retrospective at 1 year. We're going to know more as we hit further on. So I'm not saying Michael's point is wrong, but I don't think one can declare as a fact that that's the case. Part two. The people in state prison weren't the big issue for me. It's the county. It's the people in the county jail. I mean, the people in prison is such a small number that are coming back to us. It's the people on the local level who we were trying to jam in. And jam is the word. Get them into treatment who just seem to now be floating through the system again and again and again. And that's what I want to try and change.
Well, I've got a listener here who says, why are the police even involved in treatment and rehab issues or have a stick to get people into treatment programs? Those are health issues, not crime issues. It's a matter for the medical community and social workers to find ways to encourage and root people into their programs. Our health professionals are the ones who have the expertise to do that. It really isn't a police job, and the police really should not be involved. They have other things to do.
I'd love to speak to that because I don't agree with it. Because guess what? Number one, the health professionals and all the mental health professionals, they're working with us on this. This isn't like we're doing it as a criminal justice system alone. And number two, they don't have any ability out in the health system to do anything. You take the great law that San Francisco's just started. We start on January 1st of Laura's law. We can't do any. It doesn't have any teeth in the end. They can say no to us. They don't have it in the civil world. We have it in the criminal world. We have the ability to try and provide the motivation. So, yeah, in the ideal world, but they don't have any ability to get the people in. If the homeless people don't want to go into it, mental health has no ability to get them in there.
Well, Attorney General Gascon, Eric writes on our website, while I'm sympathetic.
Just got promoted, Michael.
You know, I did that the last time you were on.
You did that. I don't know. I'm going to keep coming here.
I don't know what about you. I got to talk to Kamala about that.
Yeah.
Excuse me, District Attorney Gascon. I'm sympathetic with much of what Mr. Gascon is saying, Eric writes. The belief that the majority of inmates in federal or state prisons are there because of – is that you think there's some kind of unconscious wish I want to promote you? I don't know. Because of convictions for simple drug possession is a myth.
That is not the case. I mean, the fact is that the numbers that Mike, just in the California experience alone, is talking about shows that there have been a lot of people that were in prison that were imprisoned there for drug offenses. In fact, just according to the California Department of Correction, there were approximately 4,400 people that were released from prison as a result of Prop 47. But as you project, as Michael indicated in his report, it's closer to 13,000 people. The reality is that there are a lot of people in the federal system that were doing significant time for possession of rock cocaine primarily. So it is not a myth. It is a fact. Now, that may not be the case in counties like San Mateo and San Francisco, but that is not the case across the nation. In fact, I can tell you that there are people in this country that are still doing jail time, in some cases even some prison time, for marijuana possession.
Can I call you Attorney General Wagstaff, too, as long as I'm going on that right now?
Don't do it.
No, actually, let me read a tweet here. This is from Jeremy, who says, as Gascon talked about Prop 47 with Chief Greg Suhr, SFPD captains regularly say it's led to an increase in property crime.
That is a question for me.
I believe that is.
Yeah, I think that the problem is that I think it goes back to what Steve mentioned earlier, that anybody that starts to draw a correlation between any current crime trends and Prop 47 is really missing the point. That is way too early to tell. I think that the problem is that, you know, as I indicated earlier, for instance, when it comes to arrest here in San Francisco, we're getting about 2% of the crimes. When it talks to, like, burglary from vehicle, only 2% of people face arrest. The national average is somewhere between 14 and 16. It's hard to prosecute an empty chair. So first of all, we have to have a police has to make an arrest. Obviously, that arrest has to be legal. It has to be well investigated. And then prosecutors can act accordingly. I think that what we need is, you know, frankly, some of those people that are complaining about Prop 47, they need to come to the conclusion that it is the will of the people, and as public servants, we work for the people, and we need to move on.
But you get this kind of comment, too. It's no surprising, Richard writes, no surprise to anyone who lives in San Francisco that auto burglaries have increased 47% in the first half of this year. Your guest Gascon says that auto burglaries were not covered by Prop 47. Is the great increase in this crime because of poor policing or because the district attorney's not prosecuting them as felonies?
Again, 2% of the people are getting arrested. It's hard to prosecute someone that hasn't been arrested. We need somebody to be brought in front of us because before we can prosecute. And going back to the problem with car burglaries, they're not covered by Prop 47. Also, the increase in car burglaries in San Francisco began in March of 2014, way before Prop 47 passed.
Bring another caller on, and that's you, Kara. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Hi, I'm calling from San Jose, and I'm an attorney. I represent people in locked psychiatric facilities when they're placed on involuntary mental health holds. And my opinion is that forced mental health treatment actually does not work. It makes folks less likely to seek out treatment when it's not being forced. A good example is this week I had a client come in my office with a broken arm, and she didn't go to the emergency room because she has a mental health disability and she's so afraid of being placed on a hold.
Well, I thank you for that comment. In fact, I'm looking at a tweet here from that sort of dovetails. Emma writes, why not bring treatment into the jails? Why not, Michael Romano?
I think that we should try to find a way that we can combine law enforcement with medical care. I mean, this is the big conundrum. As we talked about earlier, the mental health facilities, you know, were closed in the 70s and 80s, not just in California, but around the country. And as a result, we've had a spike of people who are mentally ill and drug addicted on our streets and then in our jails. And unfortunately, the jail system is not properly equipped to be the primary source of treatment for these folks. So I do hope that moving forward, there are efforts to find a way that we can combine our efforts here, because we all, I think, are on the same page, at least the people here, that it certainly is not just more humane, but it's also more effective to provide people treatment. I do agree with Steve Wagstaff that law enforcement has a role to play. What that role is, I don't think that anybody has quite found out exactly. Right. And I hope that, you know, Proposition 47 in some ways moves us in that direction, in that at least takes the money that we're using to incarcerate these people in state prison and directs them into services. I hope that we move forward in the years ahead to find a way that we can really address this problem, which is really, I do think, the core of so much of our criminal justice issues.
And once again, Michael Romano is director of the Three Strikes Project at Stanford Law School and principal author of the Prop 47 Progress Report. A nice comment from a listener. Ben writes on our website, kudos to these professionals who are trying to make the system better. Their understanding of mental health issues is a breath of fresh air. It's time to find a solution instead of locking it up. On the other hand, here's Chuck from Oakland who writes, you started by saying that Prop 47 saves hundreds of millions, but later said the money goes to treatment, so the taxpayers save nothing. There's no savings at all.
Well, let me just say something to that. So the state savings, so there's two buckets of savings, essentially. There's state savings from reduced incarceration, state prison. That money, about $150 million this year, we estimate, and about $90 million every year after that going forward, that money will be directed into these savings and actually will not go to back into this general fund, which I suppose in theory could reduce all our taxes. So that state money definitely goes to treatment and services. On the other hand, there's about $200 million in aggregate that we estimate that the counties will save across the state. Those counties can choose to spend that money however they want. They can return it to the general fund, in which case it should reduce our taxes and actually be true savings, or it could be redirected into other services.
We've got another listener here, Michael Cheyenne by name, who wants to know how effective the drug treatment programs are that are in use, and do we have recidivism rates for people in those programs?
So the answer to that is a mixed bag, unfortunately. In California, every county has a different type of drug treatment court, drug treatment programs, and some are quite good and have very low recidivism rates and actually are very helpful towards treating addiction, and some are not quite as good. And this is true across the country. And one of the things that I think that all of us who care about these issues is trying to work towards is, first of all, finding what programs work the best and then trying to support and fund those particular programs. But unfortunately, there's no hard data as to which programs are working and how the state could best address those.
Let me bring out another caller, Sean from Santa Clara. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I have been a substance abuse professional for over 20 years and spent probably about 15 years working in San Francisco with a primarily homeless and duly diagnosed and criminal justice mandated client population. And I have about 15 different things to say, but the main one is, you know, our society, our system is so resource poor in terms of bed space, in terms of being able to actually provide a continuum of care for clients. Because one of the things that you may see with, you know, people that, for example, we had Prop 36, was they would get into treatment, they would get sort of a taste of treatment, and you start to see a little motivational movement or treatment movement, and then they get dropped because there wouldn't be the resources there to follow through. And the same thing is true for duly diagnosed clients, where there's also a mental health issue, like one of the earlier callers was talking about, where you may get enough funding or enough resource to actually treat one aspect of the problem, but not touch, for example, the mental health side, because there's no bed or there's no funding available for whatever reasons. And if you can't just touch attack the one side of the problem, it's basically just another form of incarceration. But you have to actually treat these people holistically.
Yeah. It's a multidimensional problem, Sean. In fact, both of the district attorneys are nodding their head here. That's an agreement, yeah. Thank you for that. Good to hear from you, and appreciate it. We're going to get another caller on from Napa. David, that's you. Join us.
Yeah, good morning. Let's get enlightened here just a little bit. You talk about stats. Let's go to Portugal. 5 years, they've totally legalized all drugs, and all their violent crime and all that has gone down. Now, people in this country are under the misapprehension that Harold Anslinger, the guy who started all of this back in 1947 when he was the head of the FBN, decided on his own volition to spread throughout the entire world his disagreement with drug users and that they were all criminals and all had to be prosecuted. Now, there's a recent book called Chasing the Scream. And if you read that, you will become enlightened about what is really going on. And also, anybody that calls marijuana a class one drug or narcotic is an absolute idiot.
All right, we'll let that stand there. And let me go to a few more emails here. Liz writes, I am appointed counsel for the appeals of indigent criminal defendants once they've been convicted of a crime. In my experience, it's a rare prosecutor that does not push for as much punishment as he can achieve. In my cases out of Orange County, I've seen prosecutors stretch the law and facts in order to charge several juvenile theft cases as burglaries or robberies. The goals of rehabilitation have been pushed aside in our adversarial system, and I'm grateful to the electorate for taking the system back and telling the DAs what crimes do not deserve felony treatment. I'll read one more email here from John, who says, I think Prop 47's reduction to misdemeanor status and in-jail time for low-level drug crimes was a very good idea, but punishment for second arrest for property crimes like auto break-ins and possession of stolen property need to go up substantially. As someone who has suffered 4 auto break-ins over the years, I can tell you these are very expensive. The overall societal costs would be reduced by keeping these people in jail. Anybody want to comment?
I'll comment on the first one, and then I'll leave to you to the other. Sounds like somebody who has an axe to grind because she's speaking without good knowledge. I won't speak to Orange County. I don't practice down there. But I do know a lot of the district attorneys in this state, and I think the views that George and I are expressing are shared by a lot of people as to what we want to try and do, because we don't just push for the max. As I said, we could play. George and I could direct our offices to play with 47, to work, do workarounds and things like that. And right off the bat, we've said it's the law and we're not going to do it. So that's just somebody who needs to get out and meet a few more DAs. Feel free to come on up to San Mateo County and we'll show her a different viewpoint.
George Gascon?
Yeah, I'm going to comment to the second caller or the second email concerning the desire perhaps to increase penalties for car burglaries and other offenses. I think that we already have enough laws in the books. They just need to be applied properly. We need to get our police to work with our prosecutors to make sure that we do so properly. But I think it's really important that we recognize that the majority of the people that are committing these crimes, there are many other things that are on board. And unless we treat, we have a more holistic approach to our criminal justice work, we're going to continue to have problems. Our recidivism rate is one of the highest in the world, and it is one of the highest in the world because we do not have good reentry plans. We do not think about bringing these people back and bringing them back in a productive way. And until we do so, we're going to continue to have a system that has very mixed results.
We still have a lot of work to do in terms of finding jobs, in terms of homes or some shelter, and on it goes. Plus, of course, the stigma. The thing that's heartening about this, I suppose, is, and we did a story, that is, our news department did a story on a prisoner who lost his job when they found out they had a felony on his jacket, and he went and got it rectified to a misdemeanor and was hired back. And that's kind of a heartwarming story. Thank you all, and appreciate your being with us. District Attorney Gascon, George Gascon is District Attorney for the City and County of San Francisco, former Chief of Police of the SFPD, and Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney of San Mateo County. Michael Romano, director of the Three Strikes Project for Stanford Law School. Can they read the project, the report online?
Sure. If you go to our website, threestrikesproject.org, it'll be there.
And I think we'll try to put it on our website as well. Thank you all again for being here. And you, our listeners, we're with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion online simply by going to kqed.org/forum. I want to thank those behind the scenes here. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Interns, LaToya Tools and Jeremy Siegel. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.